Okay. This is Fact the Newbie. If you're looking for Uber Hacker, you're in the wrong room. Okay. And if you couldn't figure out it was Fact the Newbie, you're in the right place because obviously you can't read. All right. So we will try to keep this as upbeat and fun as possible. So first off, who's got questions? Anybody have questions? At all. Any question right now, I'll answer 100% with total honesty. From this point. Yeah. Yes, I could. Anyway, next question.
Yeah.
You gotta spot the correct Fed, not the incorrect one. Look at the socks. Wrong socks. That's section 2 of the lecture. Anything else? Yeah.
Is that the screen?
Okay, that's going. Best site for hacking tools. I'll come up with something by the end. That's part of the closing thing. Places to go from here. Okay. No one asked the million-dollar question. Okay. Well, we'll get started. Excellent. Okay. So we'll start off with the boring stuff, such as philosophy. Usually the biggest question that everyone will walk up and ask somebody, are you a hacker? And I find this to be one of the most absolutely humorous questions at all, either to be asked or to ask yourself. Mainly because if you're asking yourself, are you a hacker, or declaring yourself a hacker, you're deciding like you're going to be a car mechanic, you're going to be a lumberjack, or you're going to be a stockbroker. You're looking at it as a profession, looking at it as something you decide one day that you're just going to start doing and go out and learn how to do. And if you decide this, you've already missed the picture. Hacking is a state of mind. Hacking is a way that you look at problems. Hacking is a way of approaching life. It's something you do on a daily basis, and you've probably been doing it for the last 10 years and didn't even realize it. You look at problems from a different angle. You don't go things in a classic textbook approach. If you did, you wouldn't be a hacker. Hackers have a tendency to, first time you pick up a Walkman, you see what kind of screws are holding it together. You don't necessarily look and see how good it sounds. You're more concerned with what kind of drive system it's using. Is it a direct gear? Is it using a flywheel? Is it running on using a large rubber ring to drive it? These are the kind of things you look at and approach. The first time, when you get a computer, do you buy a computer? Do you piece it together? If you bought one as a package unit, does the first thing you do is void the warranty, pull out the screws, and see what kind of CPU it's got? Did they rip you off? These are the kind of things a hacker will do when they're doing things. So typically what happens is you come to the realization one day that, maybe I am a hacker. Maybe I'm, So that's kind of along the lines we're looking at. So number bullet point 3, establish your code of conduct. This also falls under philosophy. Most people have an inherent sense of knowing when they're doing something wrong. Walking into the store, punching out the clerk, and walking out with the constant cash register, this is wrong. You put in a 25 cents on the gumball machine and 2 drop out instead of 1. God damn it. Is this wrong? No, you got something for free. Toshiba's. This is the kind of thing that we're looking at with good and evil. It becomes a little more of a gray area with computers. You decide to run a port scan on an IP. Is this wrong? Yes and no. Have you done anything to this computer? No. Have you intruded on the computer? No. Have you actively broken into and obtained data off this computer? No. So let me paint you another example. How about I come up to your house, and I decide to walk up and check your front door. Check the lock, rattle it. Is the door locked? I go to the windows, and I push up on all your windows and see if they're locked. I go to your car. I see if it's unlocked. I check the handles. Maybe I'll even take a Slim Jim and see if I can pop that door open. Let's test your security. Is this something you would find acceptable? Probably not. In fact, if you saw someone walking through and casing your house and checking the windows, you might get a little mad and probably call the cops. This is what happens in the event of something like a port scan. So, and this mentality is something when I tell people to, when you're getting started and getting into this environment, come up with and establish what you know to be right and wrong. Now, this may or may not be based on laws or such, but you have to look at the big picture. You have to understand what you're doing. You have to understand there is a consequence for every action you take, whether you realize it or not. Prime example, a couple years ago, there was the large denial of service attack on Yahoo, and there's been eBay and such other things. The motivation behind it could be anything from someone wanting to gain fame to someone who got annoyed to someone who's trying to win a bid. I don't know. But when you're looking at this, you have to understand that every system connected in between you and whoever is being attacked is also suffering. These are people, systems you may or may not have a problem with, or people, and you're affecting their lives and you're making their lives pretty much a living hell when you do this kind of childish behavior. And that's kind of what it boils down to. So typically it's a good idea to understand, you know, right, wrong, good, evil. They're real fine lines. They're a matter of perspective. What you might consider to be perfectly acceptable, the next guy to you might find to be criminal. And somewhere along these lines, we kind of all have to meet and hook up and understand and kind of have our own space to work with. So that's part of the long idea of what the philosophy of getting involved in this environment is. So, it'll work. Oh, wrong one. There we go. Okay. This brings us up to etiquette. And a lot of breaches of etiquette I observe around these meetings. So first point, manners. And you don't have to prove anything. Actually, let's get a shot. How many people, is this your first time at DEF CON? Whoa! Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. All right. Let's see. So, a lot of people. Okay. So, since this is new for all of you, something that happens a lot of time with these, and the adults don't tend to do as much as the younger people, but what you have is the first time someone shows up here, and they've been in their environment, they've been online, they do their things, and they have their persona. They feel the need to make an impression on somebody when they meet somebody or they see someone they've seen on TV or read reviews by or whatnot. They want to impress them. And usually the first thing that happens is they try to impress them by doing some of the most stupidest stunts you can imagine. Hang on, let me crack this open. All right. Here's a prime example from last DEF CON. Myself and about six other guys, all goons or staff or whatnot, sitting around the bar here in the lobby. And about 3:30 in the morning, this guy comes walking up to us with a couple of his friends. We immediately spotted there was going to be some kind of trouble. He looked like Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit, got the backwards hat, the whole thing, walking up. And he comes up, looks at us, and goes, "So what, y'all hackers?" And we kind of look up at him, snicker. In fact, the point of bar's over there, man. Get a drink, because you don't have one. We do. You need a drink. He's like going, "Oh, I get it. Y'all must be sysadmins, huh? You're not going to give out any information. You're going to be like that, huh?" And it's like, dude, it's 4 in the morning, man. You don't have a drink yet. Get a drink. And he kept on and kept on. He got more angry, and he kept trying to do something. And he was with his friends. And, you know, it went round and round for about 20 minutes till finally he got frustrated. He wasn't getting a rise out of me. And we sat around laughing about this guy because, it's, you know, had he walked, oh, man, that's just going to keep going, dadgum batteries. Had he come up and been friendly, we're all having a good time. We're socializing, catching up on what's happened in the last year and, you know, whatever. And out of the blue, this guy comes up trying to, like, make an impression. It's like, you know, pick the biggest dog you can find and go up and kick it to show that how tough you were that you went up and kicked the big dog. And, you know, it didn't impress anybody. And he kept doing this throughout the convention until finally at one point it got physical with somebody and he was ejected. That's that. Go home. You're not welcome here anymore because you have the wrong attitude. And, you know, it's too bad because it was a good environment. It was a chance to learn something, meet some new people and hook up. And instead you had to go be an ass. And that's it. And now no one will deal with him. And we've got his picture posted in a few places and he's still a good source of humor. And now he gets to be a topic of the lecture of don't be that guy. So along those same lines, the bullet point two that is a phrase we like to use is shut your mouth and open your ears. When your mouth is moving, your brain usually isn't working. Case in point, I'm a lecturer. So, along with bullet point three, don't look with your mouth. Use your eyes. Use your ears. Use your other senses. They're far more powerful than your mouth. If you want to learn something, you need to be quiet and make observations. Use your eyes. Listen to what people are saying. Think about what they're saying. And truly think about it and listen. Don't just hear them. And you can get terabytes of information without ever saying a word that way. The old phrase, keep your mouth quiet, keep your mouth shut and let people think you're stupid, don't open it and prove it. And this holds true a lot of times. Because you may or may not know who you're offending or being an ass in front of. And that could be someone that could be a really good person to know or a fun person to know, but you won't know until after you've probably pissed them off. So, and it brings us down to point four, how to approach people you don't know. You see someone interesting, like you're bobbing around the lobby and there's Ian Goldberg. And you've heard about him, you've seen Zero Knowledge Net and stuff, but you're not sure how to approach him. Typically, don't walk up and interrupt the guy if they're having a conversation with somebody. This happened last night. Myself, my friend Justin Bill and Peter Shipley were trying to hammer out something that had happened earlier. And these two guys kept coming up, talking to him at like 4 in the morning, wanting to walk up and talk him and touch him and hug him. And he looked at him and said, will you go away? He said, yeah, but no, go away. We're trying to have a talk here. Had he approached me another time when we were sitting around just chit-chatting or whatnot or just walking through the hallway and bump into him and say, oh, hey, aren't you so-and-so? Hey, I caught your speech or I saw you on TV, read one of your books, read a review. You know, it was pretty good. And, you know, hey, I got a question if you got time. You put it at, you know, their convenience. Don't demand attention from people because they may or may not be busy. And if they're busy and you're demanding their time at that exact moment, it's rude. And a lot of times you have to flip places. Do you want someone coming up to you and doing to you what you're doing to them? And if the answer is no, don't do it. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Like, you know, there's another case point, which one of the guys in the back was laughing and asked me, oh, are you going to go up and tell them all, don't be an ass? Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell people, don't be an ass. And then the last bullet point kind of goes along a little bit with philosophy, with maturity and temper tantrums. And, you know, someone on IRC says something you don't like and you decide you're going to pack at the guy. Okay, that's cute. That's real mature. Nice. So you're five hops away from the guy. So basically, you got three systems in between that you're also packeting and flooding these guys and tying up their time, and it's on their dime. And something I say that, you know, think about what you're going to do. Weigh your actions. If you feel that, you know, that whatever you're about to do, DOS, packeting, or just being a general nuisance on the net to something, if you feel this attack is justified and, you know, it's the consequences don't outweigh your actions, well, I'm not going to tell you not to do it, straight up. If you feel that you are right, go ahead and do it, but there's going to be consequences. There will be backlash. And ask yourself, am I just, you know, throwing a temper tantrum? Am I getting my nose out of joint because some guy called me a loser on IRC? You know, if what something that somebody says on IRC is that important to you, you need counseling because it's just IRC. You know, I have seen more wars, I have seen more fights, I have seen more long-term battling going on over IRC, and I don't get it. I've been doing various forms of online chat for at least 15 years on various networks and servers and hooking up with people. I love the medium. It is a great way to get to know people. You talk to people on a different level. It's cerebral. You're talking brain to brain. Mouth doesn't enter into it. And the dialogue you'll have with someone on IRC is far different than you're going to have face-to-face with a person. It's nice. But on that same token, take it for what it is. It is a conversation. It is interaction. It's not important, you know. So that's about it on that subject. So let's move on. Wrong button again. There we go. Learning. There's a... number one point there, coding versus compiling. And this is a big issue when people are first getting into this. You can use the old Star Wars parable, the good, you know, the force and the dark and the light side, and, you know, compiling is the dark side, coding is the light. There's a happy medium. If you need a tool and you need it now, there is no sense in, like I say, reinventing the wheel. Grab your tool, use your tool. If you need a port scanner now, download it. There's no point in rewriting things that have been written 1,000 times and available on any search engine you can find for a file, obviously. By that same token, though, if you have been running port scanners, I'll use port scanner kind of as foo and barf pretty frequently. If you have never written a port scanner and you're using them all the time, you would do yourself a world of good. Try writing one. Write it in Perl. Write it in Basic. Write it in C. Write it whatever. Pick a language, or pick a weird one. You know, pick something obnoxious off the wall. Try writing a port scanner in Python. You know, why not? Yeah, cool. And learn how it works. Understand what it's doing. Put your own features. Put your own tweaks. Make it your own personal tool. That is exactly what you want, because the goal is not to write the port scanner. The goal is to learn the machine you're on, to understand the machine, knowing how the code talks to itself, understanding what is going on inside the machine at the time. This is getting back to the essence of hacking, understanding how it works, knowing what something is doing. You know, that's the idea. When you're simply just compiling other people's code, you aren't learning a damn thing. All you are is going to 7-Eleven and buying a bag of chips, eating the chips, and throwing the bag down on the ground somewhere for someone else to trip on. That's what coding and script kiddying is. You typically are not doing anything other than, you know, passing, you know, hey, I take this, I throw this, and it's there. I didn't go get the water, I didn't fill the water, you know, this is, you're wasting space. You're a chunk of you're a chunk of biomass that is, you know, polluting everyone else's time, and you need to just go away. You're not benefiting and you're not hacking. You're a nuisance. And typically, these are the people you find doing the packet floods, going to do the port scanning, getting in IRC wars, watching EFNet crash in a piling burning code storm because someone has decided they're going to packet the servers until they split and try to gain ops on pound feed the goats or something obnoxious. Don't laugh. That's the Script Kiddie channel. So this goes along, like I said, know your code, know your tools, know yourself. If you know how to write the code for the tools you're using, you're ahead of the game. And you're on your way to actually doing some true learning for this such and how to do these things. And that's it's pretty important for getting respect from other people. If you can write your own tools and have written your own tools and can show off that you've done this, then people will understand, hey, this guy's actually doing something. He understands what he's doing. And you're going to find it's a lot more interesting and it's a lot more fun, because how long do you want to keep downloading and running other people's programs? How long do you want to keep running other people's scripts? Or even more fun, you download a script and you have no idea what the script does. They've told you what it does. You don't really know because you can't read the code. There was a neat little code I used to pass around back years back. It was kind of fun. It was called ercop.irc. And this was back when all the new people were coming in onto IRC around 93, 94. And they were all, man, how do I get ops? I want to get ops. I need ops on this channel. I'm going to take it over. Oh. And tell them, hey, I got a script for you. Want to run it? Here. DCC it over to them. And they start running it. As soon as they run it, I'd know it because showing up in my message window says you've got the loser of the day, and it's listing me my little mini menu. Meanwhile, on their side, it's saying, you know, script loaded. What channel do you want to take over? So they type in their channel. It says losers attempting to do this, and it starts playing with echo on, echo off, turning their terminal off, on, moving them to various places, and then outputting things just for them to see. And as far as they're concerned, they're taking over that channel, and it says, you know, hacking ops, hacking ops. Meanwhile, I'm sending codes like, you know, let's check their directory. Hey, look at those files. Which ones do you want to wipe out? Shall we kill root? And you know, the funnest ones was you send to it, you CTCP to it Folgers crystals, and at that point it wipes out everything in their home directory, their entire mail directory, and anything off the tree, and replaces it with a file named @Folgers_crystals. And then it announced this to the entire channel. They don't know it yet, but we've secretly replaced their home directory with Folgers Crystals. Let's see if they notice. But then again, I didn't write it. It was passed to me. So. However, I did go through and make a few of my own changes. And, of course, like I said before I ran it, I read it. And I went through and made sure that the code I was about to run wasn't about to do to me what I'm about to do to somebody else that's stupid enough to run this code. And that's along those lines. You know, next thing you know, of course, okay, more anecdote to go with this one. The other side story was one day I get a little piece of email from one of the admins saying, hi, because I'm on an EDU at this time. I went, hi, we'd like you to come in for a little meeting because distributing Trojans is not good. So I apologized and swore I wouldn't do it again. They groveled and, you know, they said, okay. So I told them, I said, they didn't have to run the code. And they go, that doesn't matter. Shame on you, Shatter. Bad Shatter. So, okay. So, let's get into the real world. Now that some of the fictitious stuff here and the abstracts. Okay. Here's the big wake-up call for a lot of people. Life is not television. Life is not the movies. This is not the movie Hackers. Okay? We don't run around with little heads-up monocles. We don't rollerblade. And, you know, I've never been on a pair of rollerblades, okay? They look like fun. They don't run CPM. What's the point? So, yeah, this is the real world. I have ran into people and listened to them sitting there and worshiping the movie Hackers going, dude, it's the greatest movie, man. This is what it's all about, man. Attacking that mainframe and taking over the Gibson. And it's like, oh, shut the hell up. Good God, you know, Penn Jillette as a sysadmin is funny. If anyone's ever met Penn, you understand why that's comical. And, you know, the whole, the Gibson, you know, yeah, it's named after William Gibson. Yes, we've all read Neuromancer. Yes, it's a fine novel. But, oh God, yeah, I can't go on that movie enough because it was just absolutely hilarious watching it. A television show I liked, it was short-lived, was Level 9 that used to be was on UPN. That actually wasn't too bad of a show. I actually ended up talking with the producer last DEF CON. He was here and walked up to me, which was kind of humorous because I'm working one of the back doors gooning, and all of a sudden this guy walks up and goes, hi, can I take your picture? And I'm like, why? He's like, well, I'm doing a TV show, and he gets me his card, and he was legit, and so we chit-chat, and he was actually here at last DEF CON getting an idea of what one of these conventions is like through using material on the show and seeing what the people, and they were trying to do it as accurate as possible. And after having watched the show, it wasn't bad. It wasn't offensive. When you're actually watching hacking, if you're not totally familiar with what hacking looks like, go over to the CTF and watch. And after about 2 minutes, you're going to be bored off your ass because it's really boring. You see some guy sitting in a screen like this, and you know he's tap, tap, tap. Tap, 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 tap. And they're at a command line just typing little things. It's not flashy. You don't see spinning graphics and polygons and flying through visually, getting this data readout and all this shit and typing to dodge and, oh, shit, he's coming. I got to hit arrow key because here he comes. And oh, God, I dodged it. Yeah. Oh, no. It's tap, 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 return. Tap, 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 tap. Tap, tap, tap. Shit. I mean, that's hacking. It's when you're getting in the computer level, but, you know, so. Bullet point two, good jobs perform background checks, and they will check your background. If it's any kind of a high-paying position, anything happening in the building. A job I was going to go on with a guy just this last spring. They were doing the background check on me, and it was pretty funny because he called me up and said, Shatter, it failed. I'm like, okay. So I ran him off list of little nuisances and traffic, everything, including every traffic ticket, every speeding ticket, everything I'd ever done. And he went back and he says, and when I named them off, he says, okay, let me go back and talk to him again. And then they had their conversation, and he goes, yeah, it was the public nuisance. I went, damn. I usually wear that one like a badge, big badge. Yes, I have been convicted, infraction, public nuisance. The people of the state of California found me to be a nuisance. Yeah! I pissed them all off! Every last one of them! I did them all! They found me a nuisance. God bless the legal system. It bit me on the ass. And they straight up said that, considering the records of everyone else that worked for this guy as a consultant and contractor, that the $3 million insurance was just not enough anymore. And before I brought that, I was like the final straw, because apparently everyone else works with the guys just even worse. They got their little bits of, you know, Friday night fist fights and other things, and they have many nuisances as well. So, but they will check this shit. So, you know, you think, you know, something you're doing when you're 18 and 19, that will hold on and those carry over. And once you turn 18, it doesn't matter what the charge is. Anything infraction and up stays on your record your whole life. And like I just, you know, my case in point, being a public nuisance was too much for these guys to have. And they said not until he had a larger insurance policy, then it wasn't a big deal. So keep that in mind, that things you're doing now might affect you when you want a job in 10, 15 years. And bullet point 3, contrary to popular belief, convicted felons do not get government jobs searching for hackers. Getting busted is the quickest way to never get a job in the security field the rest of your life. It's been a misconception I've heard ever since the first time I got into computers and stuff, that, you know, the whole the urban legend of, you know, the government secretly seeks out and gets the most hardcore, the guys that they bust, they go to them and cut them deals to get them to help them secure their systems, and that's how you do it. Bullshit. If they caught you, they don't want you. You know, you just caught you catch a kid's, you know, port scanning and packet flooding your DSL. Do you go, wow, that was great, you want a job? Fuck no. You tell the kid, anyway. So, yeah, it don't happen. And so let's get on there, point 4. White hat, black hat. Hackers don't wear hats, okay? Everyone of mine know do not wear hats. If they are, that ain't my phone. If they're going to wear a hat, usually it's something along these lines. I like this one. I'm partial to my propeller. It's got a skull, and it's black. That's a hacker beanie. Yes, it's black. Because I'm wearing a black shirt, black shorts, black boots, so anything else would look silly. Yeah, the whole hat thing is such a misconception. Anytime I hear someone like quoted as the white hat hacker so-and-so was, I want to slap them. That's just as bad. Or when they make reference to, well, these evil black hat hackers were coming in. And no. The difference between being a law-abiding white hat hacker and a evil, nasty, plague, antichrist to the world black hat hacker, as I say here, distance between those two is about 1.2 seconds, and that's the length of time it takes you from being a nice, happy guy to getting that annoying spam for the 50th time, and you decide to check the IPs, and you see it's the same IP every time, and you decide, let's go check his shares. Look at that window system. Why, he's got his shares wide open. I'm going to nail him. And guess what? As soon as you touch those shares, you just intruded on that computer. If you went across state lines, it's now a federal matter. If you went to another country, it's now an international incident. So that's about the long length of time it takes. And quite honestly, with the amount of people I know on both sides of the fence, the people in this computer security field and the people who I know through various channels that are on the other side of the fence, there's a lot of overlap. I've never met maybe only one or two really, truly nasty, evil hacker types that are out to pretty much destroy everything, and they have a pretty short life expectancy. They pretty much get nailed pretty quick because they're pretty stupid. Likewise, I have never met a pristine, perfect guy who is in the computer security field who has never snickered and done a little ta-ta-ta. Watch this. Blew his connection off. Anyway, It happens. And anytime I hear the self-righteousness, the holier-than-thou, or the I'm better than you references to white hat, black hat, gray hat, and all that, I give them a big, because it's bullshit. Your action, you know, it's all in your head. It goes back to some of the ethics, the etiquette, and your philosophy. It's what you consider to be right and wrong, and that's the differences, and that's the only place that matters. It is a putting a good, bad label on it is like saying a person is good or bad. There's all shades of it in between, and the absolute worst people in the world can suddenly be a nice guy. And the nicest guys in the world can just snap and do something pretty horrible. And that's computers is no different. It's not any kind of perfect, you know, everything written in stone. And I think I pretty much already kind of covered the concept of responsibility for your actions. And that's a big stickler with me. It's one of the things that and manners are two things that weigh pretty heavy with me and a lot of the people I know. Do what you're going to do, but be responsible about it. Don't whine. Don't say it's someone else's fault. Someone made you do it, or any other, you know, asinine excuses that you can come up with. If you did it, say you did it. You know, have the balls to do it, or don't do it. Own up to it. Okay. So, go from here. There's a lot of places to go learning. Best places to go, I find, is a bookstore. Pick up a book. Pick up a subject you've never done before. If you haven't worked with Perl, grab an Intro to Perl book and, start learning Perl. Start slapping some code out and play with it. Pick something new. That's going to be your number one source for learning is going to be a book. There is absolutely no substitution for a good, hard, rock solid based knowledge in anything. You can't learn the wrong thing. There is no wrong thing. Anything you learn is going to open the door to something else, and it's going to be a foundation to learn something more and keep moving and going. My girlfriend was learning some HTML and some other stuff, and somebody told her, "Well, why are you bothering? That's a waste of time." It's not a waste of time, not at all. She was picking up some Visual Basic, and someone else was like, "Well, why are you doing that? Just go learn C." It's like, why? What is the point of going and learning C if you don't have the foundation things? And the foundation course that was teaching the basic concepts of computing was using Visual Basic as their learning tool. It was a tool. You could use any language. They chose that for whatever reason because that's what they did. The knowledge you learn is not going to go to waste. So anytime I hear people make references to, you know, learning something that's wrong or wasted knowledge, it's bullshit. And typically they're trying to just keep you, they don't want you to learn it typically because they probably don't know it and they haven't bothered to do it. And if you go and learn something they don't know, you're going to be better than them and they're jealous. So learn what you can, learn anything. But like I said, my first recommendation is always read a book. And there are thousands on the market to pick up. But anyway, so finding like-minded people. This is a lot of times you can do this in the bookstore. When you're browsing books, you find someone looking at the same subject. Classes at college, mail list, listservs. There's I don't remember what the last count of Usenet is. I'm wondering if it's reached the 500,000 mark yet of groups of every possible subject you can imagine for people that are doing anything and everything, hacking anything. I mean, look at some of the obnoxious work that's gone into some of the Lego Mindstorm hacking. I mean, Furby hacking. I mean, that was a big one there for a while. But, you know, that's one of the things. I mean, if you see something new that comes out and it looks interesting, you know, check it out. Work on it. See what you can do. And there's a good chance you're going to find other people that are probably doing the same thing at some point. Obtaining a project. This is another way you can also find people and meet them. Like I said, like the Furby thing. Pick a project, pick something big, and it doesn't necessarily matter what it is because the goal is not to get from point A to point B. It's to go to point A via the town next town over and learn all those maps before you come back to B. Picking things up along the way, finding new things, anything you just haven't ever done before. There is so many things out there besides learning code, learning TCP/IP, learning C, learning Perl. That's a speck of dust on the wind of things you can learn and hack on. It's so many, it's hard to even pick one to focus on. But what, it doesn't matter what you're working on, the concept is that you are learning, and that's typically what the hacking is all about. If you're hacking and you're here at DEF CON because you want to learn how to break into a computer, you wasted your money. Go home, because you missed the boat. Boat took off and ain't coming back. You're a lost cause at that point. Avoiding jail. This is always a good one. Avoiding jail. Don't break the law. It sounds pretty simple, but you'd be surprised how often people break the law because they don't know the law. And ignorance of the law does not exclude you from the law. Before you're going to do anything, check it out. Look into it. Know what you're doing. Make sure you're not doing something you shouldn't do. If you want to practice breaking into computers, your best bet is to build your own local network, break into your own systems. And then however you broke into that system, go to that box, repair it, and try to block that. Then go back to your other box and re-attack it. And work on your own system, because what you do on your own computers is your business. And you can do anything you please, launch any nasty anything, viruses, email bombs, all of it. As long as you are not sending it outside of your own local network, you're fine. And in fact, it's encouraged. That's a great way to learn. That is an excellent way to get into some of the hard hacking, because there's many steps to get up to that. Because before you have your own local area network, well, you need a network. So you're going to have to get into learning the networking. Well, before you have your network, you're going to need machines. And the best way to get machines, build them. And you don't necessarily need money, because you don't need a high-end machine necessarily to do some of these things. This stuff worked great on 486s. This stuff worked great on Pentiums. You don't need a 1.3 gig Athlon running 512 megs of RAM to play around with DOS attacks. You don't need it. So you can find probably free machines, parted out machines, or anything else laying around from people you know, and slap them together and build them. I mean, the other day, me and my brother got bored, and we got to talking about it, and we wanted to play a bunch of some of the old Crunch classic DOS games that just absolutely don't run in Windows, or they were even using various other things, they won't run. So we started digging around through the drawers, and we scrounged up one of our old motherboards. We pulled out a chip. The only thing we actually ended up buying for the system in the end was we bought a 32 meg stick of RAM for $9. And everything else was parts we had laying around. We shoved it all in the machine. I found an old ancient crusty hard drive that was, I think, it's an 80 meg drive. Shove that in there because it still spun. And, you know, now we got a machine. And so we're going to run DOS on it. We could easily have put Linux, BSD, or anything else. No, it's not going to be the fastest thing in the world, but who cares? It was nothing. And along the way, if you've never done something like that, you should. And figure out what's going on. And your best thing that can possibly happen is it doesn't work. Because if it doesn't work, now you got to find out why. And the why, it goes back to what we're trying to do here, is the why it's going on, the how, not the fact that it's doing it, not the fact I pushed this button and, you know, push that button, that happened over there. Ah, neat, I'm done. Nah. Why did it do it when you pushed the button? So, hangover remedies. How many people got hangovers today? You people weren't having enough fun last night. Hangover remedy. Best hangover remedy? Don't drink! That doesn't happen at DEF CON, not when we feature the TCP/IP drinking game. Yes, alcohol and DEF CON go hand in hand, and I don't advocate drinking much. I encourage drinking a lot because this hurts. Anyway, so fun stuff at DEF CON. Lectures are a great, great source of killing time during the day until the parties start in the evening. And I always hear things on news sources and other places, people saying that, you know, that DEF CON's a farce. I think Microsoft, I heard yesterday, once again denounced DEF CON as being fake, phony, whatever. I look around the room. This don't look too fake to me, unless you're all holograms. We haven't got those figured out yet, so you must be real, which means we're here, which means whatever we're here we're doing, it's all right. Fuck Microsoft. Why do I what? Because that's actually pretty much what was on the laptop. You know, it's here, it's running, you know, whatever. Actually, typically what I was doing a lot of dialing into my old job with this from the road, and in their infinite wisdom decided to go from a standard login system to to using a Windows networking remote login system, and they completely bypassed the intermediary server, which used a complete separate login and password. And that was to make it easier, which I laughed myself silly because, well, they were simply using everyone's local in-office machine login username password. And that's if you even bothered putting one on. You know, it's just your desktop machine. What do you need a password for? It's a workbox. So next thing you know is, of course, someone may want to change their password, or they're going to issue a new password. And, of course, they you know, email it out in their infinite wisdom, got rid of the wonderful SendMail box that we had running that was running, on a Sun system, and threw that out because the company, they only use Exchange Server because, damn it, it's better. We had a virus a week. Actually, we had a virus about every 2 to 3 days. They were getting hit with yet another VBS script virus. I hate using that term for the VBS because all they are is a glorified script. But needless to say, of course, it would go through, hack in, take over everyone's machine, email bomb everyone, and, you know, could box up and take the email and send it to whoever. So if everyone's passing their passwords around in email like they did, there we go, compromised. Of course, that wasn't the only compromise there. The Unix systems, I think, were set up by people who were MCSE trained, which means they don't understand the concept of groups. And so the only way it got the entire system to work on the full cluster was everyone used the same login. Why not? And even better, when they would write various Perl scripts to handle various other jobs and such, we'll just, in the code, telnet, and there's the user and the password. Good, the script runs. That ran for the next 3 years. And so anytime they wanted to change the password for everyone to use, they had to go through and change every script, some of the programs, some of the compiled code, because they put the user login and password right into the code. And, of course, all the source was sitting there. The sad part is this is pretty typical of a lot of companies. And, you know, you see in the news that this company got hacked, or these guys got DOSed, or these guys got defaced. And you wonder, wow, how can this be? This is why. The typical home user or the typical DEF CON attendee's home system is probably locked up 10,000 times tighter than the average corporate system. And I kid you not, guys who are hacking and whatnot back and forth on each other, their systems are far tighter than most anything you're going to find in the commercial industry. And it's pretty sad. But, you know, on the flip side, you know, when they get attacked, you know, I can't be too sad. It's like, well, you were stupid. You know, if you make it, some of these companies, you make a recommendation about it, and they think you're about to hack them. It's like, no, I want my company's system to be tight if I'm going to be on it. And they think, oh, you're talking to security. You're probing the ports. You're going to do something to us, aren't you? Not me. Somebody will, though. So, anyway, somebody put their hand up. Okay, so I think we're wrapping it down here. Yeah, I've got a few more minutes. So now do we have any questions? Yeah.
Can you elaborate on firewalls,
Are you talking home-based or corporate? Home-based. Most of them boil down to the same idea that what they're doing is to get down to two types of home systems. You either have one that by default blocks certain port, by default blocks every port. I like those ones. Those are nice. First, or you have the flip side where they automatically, if every port open, you decide what to block. For most people in the home, automatically blocking everything and then asking you if you want it open is a little better. Typically, what I'll throw on systems, I got it on this one here. This is an old one that was bought out by Symantec, bought these guys, and it turned into their internet, what do they call it? Internet personal security or internet security product. No, it's a Symantec one. Norton personal security, I think, or something like that. I don't know. Personal firewall. Okay. This was the predecessor to it called AtGuard, and it was absorbed by them and stripped down. But the nicest thing about this was it actually blocked ads, and I don't see ads on web pages. But it had a firewall here, and you can see it automatically, by default, this was a default one here, blocking back Orifice and Netbus. I'm sure had they stuck around or stayed as they were, they would have probably run Sub7 and some of the other ones and blocked them. But this one here, by default, blocks all ports and then asks you what you want open. And it's pretty friendly. It was decent. Easiest thing is experiment with them. See what you like and what works for you. Louder. I got bad ears. Read anything you've never read. That's, huh? Oh. Yeah, he wanted to know what books I recommend. I straight up say anything you haven't read. If you've heard about it and you don't know anything about it, grab a book on it and read it. Start there.
What would you do for, like, IRC? Where would you go for information? And is there any fees available?
Usenet, man, it's almost as bad as a search engine. You just punch in something after you download the entire list and find something for a word you're looking for. Word of mouth, too, with some people. You kind of just poke around and see what there are. A lot of times, some of the more intensive ones, the name will have absolutely nothing to do with what the discussion is. IRC is IRC, man. That's anarchy. it's just goes. It also depends on which network you're on. I kind of backed out of most of it. Yeah. I got the first three words. I'm still, man. Likely, what he's asking is the legalities of, say, you're attacking your friend who's somewhere else. It depends on the type of attack, and you have to make sure that you are not violating use agreements with your ISP. Your ISP that you're providing or whatever usually is the first one that's going to say anything about it, and if they allow it, then everyone in between, it doesn't matter. Depends on the type of attack you're doing. If you're straight up DOSing, you're going to be DOSing everybody in between your two boxes, and even packet floods that can be going on too. It depends on the type of attack. If it's a high bandwidth connection, just hammering everyone along the lines. If you're using a Smurf based distributed attack where many are sending to the one, that will still end up hurting the ISP. It depends on how far up the chain it is. So, but if you're straight up trying to just do a penetration attack, you're probably going to be okay, as long as it's consensual. But check with the ISP and see what they straight up say, do and don't do. But anything that's gonna affect any system along the chain, that's typically illegal. That's the easiest way to think about it. And along the same way, ethically as well, make sure that, you know, you're not bugging anybody else in your exploration. Yeah. Not if, unless you have it set inbound, outbound, I'd say no, as well as along the lines of it depends on the game. I mean, if the game has a potential to exploit, then yes, you could. But I'm pretty willing to bet unlikely, because the game is only going to have access to certain resources. And unless it's got the ability, the game itself has the ability to do things like modify your master boot record or whatnot, you know, you should be all right. Huh. Okay, I'm old. To me, a cracker is the guy who's busting open software. That's how it's always been to me. This other term of calling, separating the difference between a hacker and a cracker as being, you know, what they're doing. You know, to me, that's like newfangled thingamajig. But depending on the cracker, what they're doing, I tend to lump them in with a script kiddie, which is 9/10 of all the crackers out there are script kiddies. They get on bug track, they look for the newest exploit on what server, and then they exploit that server to deface. And, you know, is that impressive? No, not really. I find defacements to be pretty boring, pretty tedious, and silly. And unless it's really, really well done, New York Times, that was great. That was funny. I sent the New York Times hack about 3 years ago. You can find it. That was Hacking for Girlies, and if you jump on Attrition, you can find it in the archive. That was beautiful because they cleaned it out. New York Times completely stripped it, and a couple hours later, it's defaced again. It took them better part of a week to track down every little place that they hid the cron jobs and the code, and got in and really just blew it open. So that was actually pretty good versus going in and nailing an IIS server. And the humorous thing is, if you go and look at Attrition, you can kind of start painting a picture of these defacements, and you look at when they hit, and you'll see some group will suddenly, this day, did 28 defacements. And you go and look at the details of it, every defacement was on the same type of server, using the same exploit, the same time, uploading the same page. Bang, 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 that's a script. And what they did was they had a little script, they went, launch! And they went, look what I did. I didn't do shit. They sat and they changed a few variables and said launch. And it went out and started going through hitting systems saying, what are you? No, what are you? You're that? Oh, I'm going to exploit you. Who are you? Who are you? And that's all it is. It's kind of like, it's pretty similar to running it's like port scanning, except they're hitting multiple websites, looking to see what server they run and exploit it. So I it's not impressive. Yeah, I got him. Huh? The human factor is almost always the weakest link of the chain. Humans are stupid. They're really dumb. They use birth dates for passwords. They use their social security number. They use their maiden name. They use pass. They use test. I don't know who it was, but somebody at one point found out that the city cash manager of New York City for Citibank back in 1987, the main root login was user city password cash. I kid you not. And they were that ridiculous. So, I mean, that's called human error. Right. Yes. That's actually using technology to change human behavior, and that's actually fairly good. Your simplest, your basic thing of way of, if you're, you know, like you said, to spend a dollar to secure a system, look at the big picture, draw a big picture of what's going on, and essentially try to figure out what your weakest point is. I mean, the same company that was doing the same account for everybody, and we're talking like 300-400 people going on noisy dial-ups and coming across DSLs using RSH to log in. We didn't SSH. We RSH'd. They said SSH was too buggy to use, is what the admins told us. I laughed a lot. So their solution was to put up a second firewall. We'll put up another firewall. We'll be even more protected. I kid you not. Two firewalls does not mean twice as secure. Two firewalls means you're paying admins who don't know jack and shit. And they're just spending more money because they don't know what they're doing. And they just think, well, firewall will protect me. Firewall is only as good as the guy who set it up. Firewall is only going to be as good as the guy who wrote the port blocks. And if you're running a Unix system, if you've got Windows machines on the backside of it and you're not blocking ports 137 through 139 barred from the outside world, that is the biggest hole in the world. And it's in every version of Windows, even the new ones, every one of them. And if you've got 137 and 139 open, you might as well just bend over and spread them, because anybody can come flying in with a shares exploit. So in fact, here's my tip I tell everybody. The two things you can do if you are running Windows on your home computer to make yourself almost fairly secure as your first line of defense is, number one, I'll type it right now. Go into, let's see. All right, let's go. You want to go into go in here. All right. Delete this file. Destroy it. Devastate it. Kill it. Make it go away. And if you want, you can even go in and remove the file associations to both of. There's two points to dot. There's one to .vbs and one to something else. If you delete that, you will protect yourself from probably 99% of the email viruses floating around the network today. This is the Windows scripting host, and it has one purpose: to run Visual Basic scripts on your system. And I'd say 99.9% of all people running Windows do not run VBS scripts. That's that simple. Yet the default for all Windows installations is to incorporate this into Windows. For anyone that knows Perl and Unix systems, this is the same equivalent as giving root access to Perl programs running under any user. Okay? You should be laughing at that point. That is exactly what that program does. You can tell it to wipe out C. And then when you're wiping out C, you can also tell it, by the way, hide the dialog boxes and make itself run completely silent. That is how the I Love You virus runs. That's how all these other ones are doing it. They run through that thing there. If you destroy that, you will protect yourself. And number two, like I was saying before, run any kind of personal firewall, public or whatever, and block ports 137 and 139 from outside access on your system. Easiest way is if you're running a DSL or a dial-up, designate that LAN card or whatever, or if you're not running a home network, then just block it because it's not needed. And that will block you from the shares exploit, which is, you know, wide open by default on Windows. So between those two, you're not 100% at that point, but you're a whole lot better than you were 2 minutes before. I'm talking about the Windows networking sharing. It's essentially kind of like a file share system that you... You probe on 137 and then you talk on 139, yeah. But you can go into anyone's system effectively and by remote turn it on, access their printers. When we first were playing with this, some guy argued, "Oh, you can't do that." So we dropped the Windows help file to his printer. Every page. Made a believer out of him. All right, louder. Yeah. There's quite a few of them. If you want to pay, you can use Secure CRT, which is pretty slick. There's also several public domain ones you can download. If you go to like Google or something, or even files.com or whatever, put in Windows SSH client, and you should get quite a few returns. Yeah. Probably start with, you can always go to Loft. Loft has got some of their stuff. They've done Loftcrack and whatnot. Loftcrack's a nice one if you're adminning a box to run on your run against user account passwords to kind of do a quick hit to make sure they're not using stupid dictionary ones. It's similar to running a dictionary one, but Loftcrack, you can also run Deepcrack and do a hard penetrate. But there's stuff like that. Numerous resources. I don't have one offhand. Like I said, you throw in Google and just type in, hacking tools, and you'll probably get at least 300,000 or 400,000 returns. Try to stick to ones that look that have fairly good references on their site, referencing back to say, like, you know, not just saying, "Hi, we like CDC" or "Hi, we like Loft," but tied into maybe. Trying to think offhand. Places like slash.org, if they send you to a tool site, it's probably a little more on the up and up versus somebody who's backdoored all their tools, which is a big thing you got to look out for, that, you know, someone distributing it, script kiddies can easily backdoor all the tools and put them up. Even things like Secure CRT, you could have downloaded Secure CRT from somebody and running it, and little do you know that there's actually hidden inside the actual .exe file is a little keylogger that will once a day send out a short little burst back to their system, letting you know everything you've ever typed. So, anyway, okay, it's 1:00, and someone else is about to come on deck, so I'm going to wrap it up. I'm Gooning, and I'm around. If you want to know anything, come up and ask me. I'm always around.